Hello and welcome to the News and Podcast. Our vision is to explore how we can create a new global system, a newism, where all forms of life can thrive within the means of the planet. In this episode, we will be looking at work and what it will look like in a newism. What work will we do? What work will we value? And will we even work at all? It's so important that young people are at the front and centre of these conversations, as they will be the leaders of any future that we create. We are therefore delighted to welcome Juan Francisco Barón, a changemaker from Argentina who established Nodo, a digital cultural centre which creates, distributes and promotes human rights in digital environments. He's having huge impact and is creating real positive change already, so we're really honoured to have him on the show. Juan, welcome to the Newism. First of all, we'd love to hear a bit more about you, your work and your vision for a better future, so it would be great if you could introduce yourself.
Thank you, Alexandra, and thank you, Mel, for having me here. Well, as you said, what you could say, a young changemaker. I'm 26 years old, and I'm working based in Mendoza, Argentina. And I would define my newism as new digitalisms, to work in digital environments, to create a more democratized environment in the digital spectrum, because as many people would know, the digital spectrum is inhabited by these big corporations that tend to monopolize what's being done on the internet. And for people in the global south, specifically for people in Argentina, which is my case, there aren't a lot of alternatives to those big corporations. So my work right now is focused as a cultural manager in creating alternatives, Nodo being one.
Great, thank you. It's really great to have you on and to hear about your work. It's obviously so important, and we're really excited that you're doing it. I will now pass over to Mel so you and he can have your conversation about work in the newism.
Awesome, thank you.
So thank you, Juan, and it's great to meet you. And it's really fantastic to hear about the work that you're involved in. It's so important, and it's so constructive and positive. So it's fabulous to meet you and then to talk to you. Obviously, as you know, we're talking about the newism. So what does the world look like in terms of being sustainable and fair in the future? And one issue is obviously about work. And, you know, in the past, in the Industrial Revolution, you had thousands of people working in unsafe factories and mines and so on. But the world of work has changed. People are still working for corporations, but now there's many more people just working on their own. And the technology means robots appear and do jobs that people previously found difficult to do because they were very manual and dirty and difficult. And so maybe that has to be a good thing, but it means that what's the role of human beings in the world going forward? And, you know, the area you're involved in, creativity and digital arts and so on, is a fascinating area that human beings become more about their brains and their creativity rather than their muscles of emptying rubbish bins or whatever. So I'm just interested to talk to you about that, where you think work might be. And if it's changing, you know, how do people gain an income if you get moving into the creative space? And how do we look after individuals that are maybe very creative, but not necessarily in the old paradigm, productive in terms of things that they are producing? So I wonder if you have a view on that, where you think things might be going.
Well, as an example, when the pandemic started here in Argentina, there was like a big movement from artists and digital creators, really every kind of creative. They migrated to digital environments to post their artwork freely on social media and to do it as a way to sort of entertain society when it was like locked. So that generated two things. The first one, it was like arts became relevant and arts became something you would see every day on your social media. The second one being that corner was free, so the artist didn't perceive any income from it. Because in order to make an income on social media, you need to be an influencer or you need to be extremely famous. And that system only supports a few. So at first, Nodo became a direct response to that, like a way to monetize in Argentinian pesos, because as I said, the currency that was usually used in platforms was US dollars, and it was complicated because of the status of the Argentinian economy to access to those dollars and to be able to work, to truly work in that environment. So Nodo became an alternative to way to monetize content as a digital artist. And I think there are a lot of opportunities that are coming up. The non-fungible tokens based on blockchain is one of those responses. And there are many other responses that are focused, especially on what I really value, that is independent artists. And by independent, I mean artists that are not integrated to big corporations. For example, if I wanted to create a play or a movie, I can't post it on an on-demand platform, like one of the ones you could usually, that you usually have in your place, for example, Netflix or Amazon. Like, I don't have the ability to get to those places. So where can I post? And that's a big chunk of the artist creatives that were left out at the beginning of the pandemic, since you don't have your regular venues, you can't interact in the digital space. Where do you go now? I think job-wise, creativity will find a way, but it's concerning and it should be addressed as a public policy in each state, because there needs to be public defense on how to create online and how to make a living out of working in the digital spectrum. I'm mentioning artists, but also digital freelancers come to mind, other creatives come to mind, and well, how to protect these jobs in the future, I think will be key, because it's not just the future, it's the past. It's been happening for a while now. I feel that when we're talking about the digital trends, everyone talks it like, okay, this is the big thing coming up, but things have already been happening. So this is not only the present, it's also the past. It's what also been happening. So things need to be addressed now, both from the community and both from the state and governments.
So that is a really fascinating insight that I suspect the mainstream just doesn't think about, because basically what you're talking about is people's creativity, not just as visual artists, but as playwrights or whatever, are able to find a place, possibly through yourself, for example, and then to be able to make a living, not just the income, and possibly using blockchain methods or almost a type of bartering, if you like, as a way of existing. That's a fascinating concept, particularly, I seem likely that there'll be fewer and fewer manual jobs. So the whole issue of work as we kind of know it, leaving the house for 9 o'clock and coming back at 5 o'clock, for example, is absolutely changing because of labor demands, but also because of the way online activity is. So what you're describing then is the possibility of all of us, and so many of us take photographs now, for example, of creating a system whereby it's our creativity, that side of our brain, that actually allows us to thrive potentially as humans, but basically for a better world. And I think that's a really fascinating concept that maybe needs to be looked at much, much further. can you see a point in the future where this may actually work, where people are kind of almost bartering their art or bartering with each other, if you like, in able to and creating an economic system based on that?
Yes, I think that is possible. That is happening in small scales. That is happening already with the whole NFT gallery trend that's going on. It's been a lot more artists are hopping into that train to create and to make a living out of art. I don't think the millionaire artwork selling example is good, because it only happens a few times, but there are a lot of people that are selling their artwork for not a lot of not millions, but enough for them to survive and to sustain themselves and to have like decent living quality, which is something a lot of artists hope for, just not like being millionaires, but just having a decent lifestyle. So I think that's already happening in small scales. And I think art has a complicated way of being replaced by machines, because art is subjective, and that's the one thing you can't ask machines to do, is that to be subjective. So it's hard right now for machines to replace artwork as we know it. There are examples, one could also argue that the subjectivity is in the algorithm and the person behind it, the person coding it, but it's still a job that I don't think will be replaced in the near future. And also art as a perk, the artistic thinking, I think it's being valued more and more as a way to think out of the box and as a way of working and interacting with other jobs in order to make them more human and more responsive to the issues we're facing today. So art has that possibility, and I don't think that's going away in the near future.
Really interesting. So one of the things that you're saying there is that actually, if we all kind of begin to be much more creative and switch on that side of our brain, which is creative, that actually that's going to be much better for the world in the long run. So leave the machines and the robots to do jobs that we find difficult, okay, and we could come into the whole issue about how powerful these machines can be for a moment. But what you're actually saying is that we'd all be a better life, be better fulfilled, be better connected, have better solutions possibly, if we were actually to use that side of our brain or that part of our brain much more and connect with others. That's a better way to live for everybody. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Well, I believe everyone has a bit of artistic thinking in their life that's connected deeply to emotions and to personality, to the way to develop your personality, to not just be that mindless robot that works from 9 to 5 and that compels simple tasks, but rather someone with a possibility to create. Artistic thinking for me is the way to create worlds and a way to be, to generate something out of thin air, out of a passion, out of your previous experience as your previous experience in your life. So that artistic thinking, which is not only creative thinking, because creative thinking is a way to solve issues, but artistic thinking is a way to create and to enable new ways of thinking of life. It's something that it's present in everyone, and I think it needs to be further developed in order to start having a better world. What afraids me as someone with 26 years old is not only how are we going to inhabit the world that's being left for us, but rather how we can imagine better worlds. I mean, as you were mentioning the essence, you know, you have capitalism, and there's a phrase that really stuck to me when I first read it. I think it was by Jameson, that is, it's easier to think the end of the world than the end of capitalism. And art is a reflection of that. For example, there are a lot of post-apocalyptic movies, but capitalism is still working in those movies. So how to imagine new worlds is deeply important, because I think it's important for people to have a plate of food to eat at the end of the day, but it's also fairly important, if not as equally as important, to be able to imagine a better world. And to have that possibility and that capacity is something that as a society we need to nourish and to promote.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I guess for us at the New Ism, what we're trying to do is to imagine that world. We're very positive. We try and create positive discussions as we're having now. But it's really interesting what you're saying, because you know you're saying that actually the way to help that or be part of that is actually artistic thinking. And so we our line at New Ism is that we want to speak to positive people who have ideas such as yourself and build something up. But actually at the moment we haven't got the answer. We haven't got what the new theory is, which is why we're speaking to everybody to see if we can create something. But what you're saying is actually artistic thinking, artistic input can actually accelerate that process, because it's a new way of thinking, a new way of visualizing, if you like, against a backdrop of a world which seems to be doom laden, if you like, at the moment, particularly in the media. I just kind of almost stop watching it. It's awful. I haven't heard that before. I've heard of, obviously, you know, the creative side of the brain, and we can create economy out of that, which you're articulating. But I haven't heard before that actually artistic thinking can actually develop really constructive, positive solutions. And that's something you obviously believe in. So I'm interested in how we build on that. How do we bring that into influence and mainstream thinking?
Well, I think with the newism, the new thing that's coming up, art is going to be not only a part of it, but art needs to be a part of it when developing it to work that concept. I think that's key. And Right. Let me give you another example. Like, there's this whole trend of aesthetics that is happening in the internet. For example, you have the steampunk and the cyberpunk aesthetic, and you have like all this punk aesthetics. And there's a new one that really interests me by the way it's developed, that's called solar punk, which is a new aesthetic on how to integrate with the environment and how to live side by side with it. Like, more not a way to tame in the environment, but a way to inhabit it. And as one animal more, I mean, like, you have deers, you have trees, you have persons. That aesthetic is deeply creative, and it's deeply rooted in an aesthetic, which is a fundamental part of art. So the people that are working with that aesthetic are actually creating this future, the way they imagine it, at least the way it should look. And that is deeply important to have a reference. Like, when we're working to get to the any stage in society, how should it look like? And these guys are posting an opinion on it. So I think that's great. That's actually awesome for me.
So, and that's I've not heard of that before either, and I suspect many people listening here haven't. So that's called solar punk.
So yes, solar with the sun.
Solar punk, yeah, get it. So if you know, people listening here are maybe thinking, okay, well, I could do some art. How might they connect in with something like a solar punk then? Is it just a question of finding it on the internet, connecting in with it, understanding its purpose and values, and then doing things? Is that the way this goes? It's kind of an artistic movement, if you like.
I don't think it's a movement. I think it's still an aesthetic. Uh-huh. In order for it to be a movement, it needs to implement change on reality. Mm-hmm. I believe that there aren't a lot of movements yet, but I think it's a bold way to address the future, is to, okay, the future needs to look a lot more like this and not a lot like what it looks like now. What I think it's important, if someone is listening, is to connect to others that are in the same page as someone. I don't believe a lot in individual changes. I believe more like the way out is as a group, the way out of this actualism and the way into the newism is as a group. So that's something we've been working on with Noto, actually. In the last few weeks, we were developing an art jam, which is something like a game jam, but a little bit more artistically. So we brought together activists, developers, and artists in order to address the issues these activists were having to work with social justice. So what came out of it was amazing, because you don't usually mix these spheres together here in Argentina. So I think if someone is listening, I would tell them to go search for your community in order to make the change. Go see other people and talk to other people in order to implement change in your communities, because I think that's fundamental. Or in your communities, as in your the place you're living right now, but also to not be afraid to go online and search for other people that are on the same page as you, so you can reflect and create, which I think is something that this podcast is doing right now. Like, I'm in Mendoza, Argentina right now, and it's raining a lot. So you're probably listening to a rain that's happening thousands of kilometers from where you're listening. And I think that's a power that the digital environment has, to connect with someone that's really, really far away and to be able to be listening to me, to us, and to go on a quest to connect with other people. You have more in common than you believe, and to go search those things you have in common, make a project out of it, and start working on implementing it for having a better world.
It's really interesting, and the notion that you're talking about, in a sense, and I do understand that the connectivity. It was raining here earlier, by the way, in my where I am. so we had the same rain. Maybe sent the rain here. I don't know. But
we're sharing the rain.
I guess in some ways what you're talking about, which I kind of also find fascinating, is the possibility that in the past people have imagined the future, which has become real, if you like. So people have imagined, you know, an apocalypse or a automated car factory or whatever. And then that's come real, or gangs fighting in areas police won't go into, etc. And so in a sense, what you're saying is, if you were to create, imagine a new world, which actually was positive. So an area that maybe was a very poor area with a lot of gangs fighting in it, for example, imagine that area as something different with fantastic art or creative leaders in it, then that's something that, that might emerge then as a reality in the future. And if we can connect across the world, then it can happen across the world very fast.
Yes, that would be the more optimistic view in it, because it's hard. It's not that easy. It's not something that can come out after a month of work, but you can make the exercise of looking, for example, at the film industry, right? And at films in the past and how they imagine the year we're living in. And you can actually see that the system, besides the fact we don't have like flying cars and a lot of robots still, like for example, using a dumb example, Blade Runner is set similarly to the time we're living in, the first one.
Yeah.
You can actually see that inequality is still part of the equation, and that people are segregated and the environment is being destroyed. And I think a lot of the film industry in the from the 20s to the 30s on have no possibility on imagining what's a world without those inequalities. And I think it's fundamental as a society to give it a little thought. Like, okay, from 10 years from now, if we took the changes necessary, how would life look like? Because we often tend to project like in the catastrophic way. If we continue with this extractivism ratio we have right now, the world is going to raise three degrees in the future. And so things are going to look bad. Okay, let's do the opposite example. How would life look like if we did things right? And how can that give us a light of hope in the future in order to walk that way, rather than thinking what things could go wrong? It's just an exercise, but I think it's vital in order to not lose hope and not think things are going to go away because they're predestined to go that way, but rather we can change things for things to be better.
So we in a sense, using art and our creative thinking, we change our destiny, if you like, and it's quite possible to do that. It's not preordained.
Yes, I think it's the only way. We can't imagine another world if we can't create it. So yeah, let's do that.
So I'm really interested in where your thinking comes from and your experience, because some years back, I was just thinking as you were talking about how many years ago, but I'm sure it was in the 90s, and I was in Buenos Aires, and it was after the financial system had collapsed in Argentina, and what was fascinating to me at the time was, despite absolute calamity, the Argentine people were working away together about how to solve the problem. So lots of people sitting in cafes talking about what they would do, bartering systems starting to emerge. I saw it was in some factories when I saw that how things had changed. Even the hotel that I was staying in, which had collapsed because of the bank had collapsed, and then the hotel, the business that was running the hotel had collapsed, but the staff had taken it over and were running it. In a very nice way, in a different way, in a nice way. Do we need some kind of shocks to the system that allow us then to create new ways of thinking, do you think? Or you know, is it kind of implicit in this anyway that we're all artists, and that we need to bring this art out of ourselves right now? And moving forward as you suggest. So I'm interested in, you know, where you, that's coming from. Was it coming from what happened in Argentina in the past, and you're Argentinian, and it's part of the culture of the country, or is it coming from somewhere else? Is it part of all of us?
I think everyone has, first of all, I don't think a crisis is necessary in order to change things, because we are living that crisis. I think that's everyday lifestyle. So that's what we're living every day, this crisis you're describing. We need to create a more sustainable way, because there's not going to be a planet in a few years. There's not going to be a planet inhabitable by humans in a few years if we continue this rate. But let's go back to this crisis thing. When the crisis happened in Argentina, I was 6 years old. I was born in 95. The crisis was in the 2001, the big financial crisis we had.
Yeah.
So I was 6 years old. And I remember my parents watching it from the TV room in my living room and not understanding a whole lot to it, but explaining, okay, so things are changing, because before that, people got used to living in the state of poverty, and things were changing in 2001. Things changed. And those episodes are very subjective to everyone. I think everyone has those episodes that mark the way you approach life and the way you feel change needs to happen. And that's something in this brief participation in this podcast I would like to address. Okay, to think what event pushed you in order to create something better, to say, okay, we're going to come out of this, but we need to come out better than we were before. And I think that is deeply subjective, but I think the global crisis that's happening, it's being lived harsher in different parts of the world. And that's not equal. The climate degradation map usually tends to go with the poorer sites, and the global south tends to be the most, the one that suffers most extractivism. So when it comes to climate, no, because there are a lot of things that are happening with gender issues, with racial issues, with economic issues, but it usually tends to be the poor people that pay the broken dishes, as we say here in Argentina. So those countries, I think, have, and those people, I think, have something to say, and they can be listened in order to get new insight on how to tackle the crisis, because they're the ones living it the harshest. But since not everyone lives in those places, not everyone listening to this podcast lives in those places, getting to the place where you think, okay, this is the thing that addressed me more in order to change. It can be a gender-related issue. It can be a climate-related issue. It can be a racial-related issue. Everyone has those intersections that mark you. And if we wanted to create a better world, how can we use your example, your subjective living example, and how to come out better out of those crises? And to take those crisis opportunities as a place where to stand and to grow up on them, and to be able to use them as examples on how to create better worlds, how to create better societies, how to use what's personal in order to make it groupal, in order to transcend that thing that was personal, because as I mentioned earlier, there are more things in common that you would think with other people. So go search for them. They are there. They are probably also searching for you, and they want to create a fairer, juster future, just like you do.
Yeah. So I think that's right. But I completely understand. And I saw with my own eyes. I was a bit older. Thank you for giving the date, 2001. I was a bit older. I could see things happening with my own eyes very fast, and how people were coming together, because lots of people, commentators said at the time, oh, well, there'll be a revolution or a military coup or some violence. And there wasn't any actually at all. And it was my observation. I was only there for a small time in Argentina, was that actually it was people coming together constructively to try and make some things happen. And it was fascinating to see, actually. But I guess one challenge we have here is about how we deal with international trends and international systems that are creating this kind of growing gap in inequality. We can try and deal with things locally, as you say, and I think it works better maybe locally, despite our RAIN agreement in Argentina and the UK at the moment. How do we scale? Maybe scale is not the right word. How do we build this so that it's happening everywhere? When we've got these forces, these really strong forces, which are actually ranged against everything that we're talking about currently, because there's a huge amount of vested interest in keeping the current system.
Well, I have two examples of things we don't need to imagine, because they already happened. So we need to incorporate them rather than to imagine them. One of them is it's feminism here in Argentina. It started out, the massivity of the movement started out approximately 4 or 5 years ago with an event called the Ni Una Menos, which was related to violence against women, particularly males killing women and other identities, trans identities particularly. But it started out as a movement that began congregated in the squares here in Argentina. And it started out as one event, and it eventually grew bigger and bigger and bigger by getting more people to join it. And eventually it migrated to something more related to abortion rights and women rights and the amount of people the amount of hours that are women usually invest in house related tasks and men. And that movement that got a symbol, which is a green handkerchief, started being replicated in other Latin American countries. Started being replicated in Chile, in Uruguay, in Peru, in Mexico. So that movement transcended what initially was what you could call a single case, because a homicide, a femicide, what we call them here when it's related to women, happened to just one woman, right? And suddenly thousands and thousands and thousands came out to the streets and started understanding that what was happening to them happened to others. And as I said, like, go look for other people that are having the same struggles as you, and don't be afraid to break those borders of your community. Go online, go search for what other people are doing. That happened here in Argentina with feminism, and they got really far. They got really impressive changes from that first movement. So it's an ongoing process. I don't know where will it end, but it's already happening. And that would be example number one. And example number two would be what happened with the Fridays for Future in Sweden. And how it started growing further and further into other countries, and that we actually have Fridays for Future here in Mendoza, which is like a city in Argentina. It's not actually the capital city. It's just where I live, Mendoza. It's a city located 1,000 kilometers away from Buenos Aires. And we actually have now a climate justice movement organized because of what happened in Sweden, which is tens of thousands of kilometers away from where I'm living. I'm going to use a phrase that was used despectively, but in order to give it relevance, which is, and they were kids. The ones that organized all this, they were kids. They were like 14 years old. They didn't have the means. They don't have the multinational company that financed them, or they didn't have, they were actually against multinational companies that actually worked against them in order to disperse their work. So these kids, as they were called in the media, actually transcended several kilometers away. So the point of these two examples is that you don't know what's the next event that will trigger a movement. You can't predict it. You can obviously set some projections and what you think things are going to come, but you can actually predict it, like, okay, this is the next big thing.
Yeah.
So everyone can be part of it. I mean, you don't know, and you don't need to be frustrated when things don't go the way you don't generate the changes you want to create. There's a beautiful phrase by Eduardo Galeano, which is a Uruguayan author. So we have a lot of connection with Uruguay in Argentina, and it's like, what's utopia? So utopia, every time I walk to utopia, it gets one step further. So every step I take, utopia walks one step back. So what's utopia good for? And it's good for walking. It's good for setting the movement.
Yeah. Lovely. I like it. So, I mean, maybe on that note, I mean, we've talked for a long time, and I think your insights and your views are really fascinating, and should form part of what we're trying to create for our newsroom going forward, for sure, particularly around artists. And those two examples you've given are examples of things that may happen. So it's about envisaging a much brighter, better future, and things will happen, and artists and etc. have a key role in creating that. So I think we have to kind of finish now, unfortunately. But I think what I'd like to ask you is, in 30 seconds, so very short, if you were to meet the world, the population going on an elevator, okay? In 30 seconds, what would you say to them constructively? You need them to do right now?
We need to get more people on the train. We need to be more. We need to go search for what we have in common, what that 99% have in common, and work from there, work from being the majority, because we are the majority. So we need to make those changes that personally affect you, to be grupo and to understand that what's happening to you happens to a lot of people. So you have more in common than you think.
That's fantastic. People should listen to that, because that is a very, very positive message. And I think sometimes we do feel isolated and alone, and watching the news makes us depressed and blah, blah, blah. But actually, by joining together, it's possible to become very positive, a positive force. So listen, I think we could talk for a long time, but we have to stop. I'd like to thank you very much for those insights, sharing those, spending some time with us, because I think they're very, very important, and what you have to say is very, very important for us, and we'd want to encompass a lot of what you're saying in a future newism. So thank you very much, Juan, and I'll hand back to Alex now.
Thank you. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, Alex, because it was a great talk.
Thank you, Juan. It's been such a privilege for me to sit here and listen to the conversation between the two of you. You brought some really incredible ideas, and I really, you know, I love how they're kind of rooted in the culture in which you grew up in, but with a really kind of global outlet. And that's, you've got such an interesting perspective from that point of view. You know, you've talked a lot about, I've got four C's noted down here: the creativity, commonality of our, you know, shared experience, the importance of collaboration and working together, and the importance of community. And I think it's really, yeah, really beautiful what you've been talking about, and the work you're doing is obviously so important and exciting and different and needed. And we'll definitely take what you've been talking about forward as we develop the newism, and we hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon. So thank you so much, and please come back and talk to us again.
Of course, you can reach me whenever you want. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for allowing me to share my voice and what I think, and for others to hear it. Thank you a lot.
Thank you, Juan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Newism Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this hopeful, inspiring conversation with Juan Francisco as much as we did. Please do tweet us on @NewismTalks to let us know your thoughts and reactions. We'll be back next week with another fascinating conversation. Please join us then.